4. Shutting off the retro jets, Seth Morley shuddered, then unfastened his seatbelt. Pointing, he instructed Mary to do the same.
"I know," Mary said, "what to do. You don't have to treat me like a child."
"You're sore at me," Morley said, "even though I navigated us here perfectly the whole way."
"You were on automatic pilot and you followed the beam," she said archly. "But you're right. I should be grateful."
Her tone of voice did not sound grateful, however, but he did not care. He had other things on his mind. He manually unbolted the hatch. Green sunlight streamed in, and he saw, shielding his eyes, a barren landscape of meager trees and even more meager brush. Off to the left, a gaggle of unimpressive buildings jutted irregularly. The colony. People were approaching the noser, a gang of them. Some of them waved, and he waved back.
"Hello,"
he said, stepping down the iron pins and dropping to the ground. Turning, he began to help Mary out, but she shook him loose and descended without assistance.
"Hi,"
a plain brownish girl called as she approached.
"We're glad to see you. You're the last."
"I'm Seth Morley," he said, "and this is Mary, my wife."
"We know,"
the plain brownish girl said, nodding.
"Glad to meet you. I'll introduce you to everyone."
She indicated a muscular youth nearby.
"Ignatz Thug?"
"Glad to meet you."
Morley shook hands with him.
"I'm Seth Morley, and this is my wife, Mary."
"I'm Betty Jo Berm," the plain brownish girl said.
"And this gentleman,"
she directed his attention toward an elderly man with stooped fatigue posture.
"Bert Kosler, our custodian."
"Glad to meet you, Mr. Kosler."
Vigorous handshake.
"I'm glad to meet you too, Mr. Morley, and Mrs. Morley. I hope you will enjoy it here."
"Our photographer and soil sample expert, Tony Dunkelwelt."
Miss Berm pointed out a long-snouted teenager who glared sullenly and did not extend his hand.
"Hello,"
Seth Morley said to him.
"Low."
The boy glowered down at his own feet.
"Maggie Walsh, our specialist in theology."
"Glad to meet you, Miss Walsh."
Vigorous handshake. What a really nice-looking woman, Morley thought to himself. And here came another attractive woman, this one wearing a sweater stretched tight over her pekin squeeze bra.
"What's your field?"
he asked her as they shook hands.
"Clerical work and typing. My name is Suzanne."
"What's your last name?"
"Smart."
"That's a nice name."
"I don't think so. They call me Susie Dumb, which isn't really all that funny."
"I don't think it's funny at all," Seth Morley said.
His wife nudged him violently in the ribs and, being well-trained, he at once cut his conversation with Miss Smart short and turned to greet a skinny, rat-eyed individual who held out a wedge-shaped hand which appeared to have sharpened, tapered edges. He felt an involuntary refusal arise within him. This was not a hand he wanted to shake, and not a person he wanted to know.
"Wade Fraser?"
the rat-eyed individual said.
"I'm acting as the settlement psychologist. By the way, I've done an introductory TAT test on everyone as they've arrived. I'd like to do one on both of you, possibly later today."
"Sure,"
Seth Morley said without conviction.
"This gentleman," Miss Berm said, "is our doctor, Milton G. Babel of Alpha 5. Say hello to Dr. Babel, Mr. Morley."
"Glad to meet you, doctor."
Morley shook hands.
"You're a bit overweight, Mr. Morley,"
Dr. Babel said.
"Hmm,"
Morley said. An elderly woman, extremely tall and straight, came out of the group, moving with the aid of a cane.
"Mr. Morley,"
she said, and extended a light, limp hand to Seth Morley.
"I am Roberta Rockingham, the sociologist. It's a pleasure to meet you, and I do hope you had a pleasurable voyage here with not too much trouble."
"We did fine."
Morley accepted her little hand and delicately shook it. "She must be 110 years old by the look of her," he said to himself. "How can she function still? How did she get here?" He could not picture her piloting a noser across interplanetary space.
"What is the purpose of this colony?" Mary asked.
"We'll find out in a couple of hours,"
Miss Berm said.
"As soon as Glenn Belsner, our electronics and computer expert, is able to raise the slave satellite orbiting this planet." You mean you don't know? Seth Morley said. They never told you?
No, Mr. Morley,
Mrs. Rockingham said in her deep, elderly voice.
But we'll know now, and we've waited so long. It'll be such a delight to know why all of us are here. Don't you think so, Mr. Morley? I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful for us all to know our purpose?
Yes, he said.
So you do agree with me, Mr. Morley? Oh, I think that's so nice that we can all agree.
To Seth Morley, she said in a low, meaningful voice,
That's the difficulty, I'm afraid, Mr. Morley. We have no common purpose. Interpersonal activity has been at a low ebb, but of course it will pick up, now that we can...
She bent her head to cough briefly into a diminutive handkerchief.
Well, it really is so nice.
She finished at last.
I don't agree, Fraser said. My preliminary testing indicates that, by and large, this is an inherently ego-oriented group. As a whole, Morley, they show what appears to be an innate tendency to avoid responsibility. It's hard for me to see why some of them were chosen.
A grimy, tough-looking individual in work clothes said,
I notice you don't say us, you say they.
Us, they, the psychologist gestured convulsively. You show obsessive traits. That's another overall unusual statistic for this group. You're all hyper-obsessive.
I don't think so, the grimy individual said in a level but firm voice. I think what it is that you're nuts. Giving those tests all the time has warped your mind.
That started all of them talking. Anarchy had broken out. Going up to Miss Berm, Seth Morley said,
Who's in charge of this colony? You?
He had to repeat it twice before she heard.
No one has been designated,
she answered loudly over the noise of the group quarrel.
That's one of our problems. That's one of the things we want to...
Her voice trailed off in the general din.
At Beetlejuice 4, we had cucumbers, and we didn't grow them from moonbeams the way you hear. For one thing, Beetlejuice 4 has no moon, so that should answer that.
I've never seen him, and I hope I never will.
You'll see him someday.
The fact that we have a linguist on our staff suggests that there are sentient organisms here. But so far, we don't know anything because our expeditions have been informal, sort of like picnics, not in any way scientific. Of course, that'll change when...
Nothing changes, despite Spektowski's theory of God entering history and starting time and emotion again. No, you've got that wrong. The whole struggle before the Intercessor came took place in time, a very long time. It's just that everything has happened so fast since then, and it's so relatively easy now in the Spektowski period to directly contact one of the manifestations. That's why, in a sense, our time is different from even the first 2,000 years since the Intercessor first appeared.
If you want to talk about that, talk to Maggie Walsh. Theological matters don't interest me.
You can say that again. Mr. Morley, have you ever had contact with any of the manifestations?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I have. Just the other day, I guess it was Wednesday by Tekel Ufarsin time, the Walker on Earth approached me to inform me that I had been given a faulty noser, the result of the using of which would have cost my wife and I our lives.
So it saved you. Well, you must be very pleased to know that it would intercede for you that way. It must be a wonderful feeling.
These buildings are built lousy. They're already ready to fall down. We can't get it warm when we need warm. We can't cool it when we need cool. You know what I think? I think this place was built to last only a very short time. Whatever the hell we're here for, we won't be long. Or rather, if we're here long, we'll have to construct new installations right down to the BX cable.
Some insect or plant squeaks in the night. It'll keep you awake for the first day or so, Mr. and Mrs. Morley. Yes, I'm trying to speak to you, but it's so hard with all the noise. By day, of course, I mean the 24-hour period. I don't mean daytime, because it's not in the daytime that it squeaks. You'll see.
Hey, Morley, don't get like the others and start calling Susie dumb. If there's one thing she's not, it's dumb.
Pretty, too.
And do you notice how her?
I noticed, but my wife, you see, she takes a dim view, so perhaps we better drop the subject.
Okay, if you say so. What field are you in, Mr. Morley?
I'm a qualified marine biologist.
Pardon? No, were you speaking to me, Mr. Morley?
I can't quite make it out. If you could say it again. Yeah, you'll have to speak up. She's a little deaf. What I said was, you're frightening her. Don't stand so close to her.
Can I get a cup of coffee or a glass of milk anywhere?
Ask Maggie Walsh. She'll fix one for you. Or BJ Berm.
Oh, Christ, if I can just get the damn pot to shut off when it's hot. It's been just boiling the coffee over and over again.
I don't see why our communal coffee pot won't work. They perfected them back in the early part of the 20th century. What's left to know that we don't know?
Think of it as being like Newton's color theory. Everything about color that could be known was known by 1800.
Yes, you always bring that up. You're obsessive about it.
And then Land came along with his two light source and intensity theory, and what had seemed a closed field was busted into pieces.
You mean there may be things about homeostatic coffee pots that we don't know? That we just think we know?
Something along that order.
And so on. Seth Morley groaned. He moved away from the group, toward a tumble of great water-smoothed rocks. A body of water had been here at some time, anyhow, although perhaps by now it was entirely gone.
The grimy, lanky individual in work clothes broke away from the group and followed after him.
Glenn Belsner? He said, extending his hand.
Seth Morley.
We're a friggin' mob, Morley. It's been like this since I got here, right after Fraser came.
Belsner spat into nearby weeds.
You know what Fraser tried to do? Since he was the first one here, he tried to set himself up as the group leader. He even told me, for example, that he understood his instructions to mean that he would be in charge. We almost believed him. It sort of made sense. He was the first one to arrive, and he started giving those friggin' tests to everybody, and then making loud comments about our statistical abnormalities, as the creep puts it.
A competent psychologist, a reliable one, would never make a public statement of his findings.
A man not yet introduced to Seth Morley came walking up, and extended. He appeared to be in his early 40s, with a slightly large jaw, ridged brows, and shiny black hair.
I'm Ben Tallchief. He informed Morley. I arrived just before you did.
He seemed to Seth Morley to be a little unsteady, as if, Morley reflected, he's had a drink or three. He put out his hand and they shook. I like this man, he thought to himself, even if he has had a couple. He has a different aura from the others. But, he thought, maybe they were all right before they got here, and something here made them change. If that is so, he thought, it will change us too, Tallchief, Mary, and I, eventually. The thought did not please him.
Seth Morley here, he said, marine biologist, formerly attached to the staff of Tekel Ufarsin Kibitz. And your field is?
Tallchief said,
I'm a qualified naturalist, Class B. Aboard ship there was little to do, and it was a 10-year flight. So I prayed via the ship's transmitter, and the relay picked it up and carried it to the intercessor. Or perhaps it was the manufacturer. But I think the former, because there was no rollback of time.
It's interesting to hear that you're here because of a prayer, Seth Morley said. In my case, I was visited by the Walker on Earth at the time in which I was busy finding an adequate noser for the trip here. I picked one out, but it wasn't adequate. The Walker said it would never have gotten Mary and myself here. He felt hungry.
Can we get a meal pried loose from this outfit? He asked Tallchief.
We haven't eaten today. I've been busy piloting the noser for the last 26 hours. I only picked up the beam at the end.
Can we get a meal pried loose from this outfit? He asked Tallchief.
We haven't eaten today. I've been busy piloting the noser for the last 26 hours. I only picked up the beam at the end.
Glenn Belsner said, Maggie Walsh will be glad to slap together what passes as a meal around here. Something along the lines of frozen peas, frozen ersatz veal steak, and coffee from the goddamn unhomeostatic friggin' coffee machine, which never worked even at the start. Will that do?
It'll have to, Morley said, feeling gloom.
The magic departs fast, Ben Tallchief said.
Pardon?
The magic of this place.
Tallchief made a sweeping gesture which took in the rocks, the gnarly green trees, the wobble of low hut-like buildings which made up the colony's sole installations.
as you can see.
Don't sell it completely short, Belsner spoke up. These aren't the only structures on this planet.
You mean there's a native civilization here?
Morley asked, interested.
I mean there are things out there that we don't understand. There is a building. I've caught a glimpse of it, one time on a prowl, and I was going back but I couldn't find it again. A big gray building, really big, with turrets, windows, I would guess about 8 floors high. I'm not the only one who's seen it, he added defensively.
Berm saw it. Walsh saw it. Fraser says he saw it, but he's probably horse-crutting us. He just doesn't want to look like he's left out.
Morley said, Was the building inhabited?
I couldn't tell. We couldn't see that much from where we were. None of us really got that close. It was very, he gestured, forbidding.
I'd like to see it, Tall Chief said.
Nobody's leaving the compound today, Belsner said. Because now we can contact the satellite and get our instructions, and that comes first. That's what really matters.
He spat into the weeds once more, deliberately and thoughtfully, and with accurate aim.
Dr. Milton Babel examined his wristwatch and thought, It's 4:30 and I'm tired. Low blood sugar, he decided. It's always a sign of that when you get tired in the late afternoon. I should try to get some glucose into myself before it becomes serious. The brain, he thought, simply can't function without adequate blood sugar. Maybe, he thought, I'm becoming diabetic. That could be. I have the right genetic history.
What's the matter, Babel?
Maggie Walsh said, seated beside him on the austere briefing hall of their meager settlement.
Sick again?
She winked at him, which at once made him furious.
What's it now? Are you wasting away like Camille from TB?
Hypoglycemia, he said, studying his hand as it rested on the arm of his chair. Plus a certain amount of extrapyramidal neuromuscular activity. Motor restlessness of the dystonic type. Very uncomfortable.
He hated the sensation, his thumb twitching in the familiar pellet rolling motion, his tongue curling up within his mouth, dryness in his throat.
Dear God, he thought. Is there no end of this?
Anyhow, the herpes simplex keratitis which had afflicted him during the previous week had abated. He was glad of that, thank God.
Your body is to you like what a house is for a woman, Maggie Walsh said. You keep experiencing it as if it were an environment rather than...
The somatic environment is one of the realest environments in which we live,
Babel said testily.
It's our first environment as infants, and then as we decline into old age, and the form destroyer corrodes our vitality and shape, we once again discover that it little matters what goes on in the so-called outside world when our somatic essence is in jeopardy.
Is this why you became a doctor?
It's more complex than a simple cause and effect relationship. That supposes a duality. My choice of vocations...
Pipe down over there! Glenn Belsner yapped, pausing in his fiddlings.
Before him rested the settlement's transmitter, and he had been trying for several hours to get it functioning.
If you want to talk, clear out.
Several other people in the hall added noisy agreement.
Babel, Ignatz Thug said from the seat in which he sprawled. You're well named.
He barked a canine-like laugh.
You too,
Tony Dunkelwelt said to Thug.
Pipe down!
Glenn Belsner yelled, his face red and steaming as he poked the innards of the transmitter.
Or by God, we'll never get our poop sheet from the friggin' satellite. If you don't shut up, I'm going to come over there and take you apart instead of taking this mass of metallic guts apart. And I'd enjoy it.
Babel rose, turned, and left the hall. In the cold, long sunlight of late afternoon, he stood smoking his pipe, being careful not to start up any pyloric activity. And contemplated their situation. Our lives, he thought, are in the hands of little men like Belsner. Here they rule. The kingdom of the one-eyed, he thought acidly, in which the blind are king. What a life.
Why did I come here?
He asked himself. No answer immediately came, only a wail of confusion from within him, drifting shapes that complained and cried out like indignant patients in a charity ward. The shrill shapes plucked at him, drawing him back into the world of former times,
into the restlessness of his last years on Orionis 17, back to the days with Margot, the last of his office nurses with whom he had conducted a long, inelegant affair, a misadventure which had ended up in a heap of tangled tragicomedy, both for him and for her. In the end, she had left him. Or had she? Actually, he reflected, everyone leaves everyone when something as messy and jury-rigged as that terminates. I was lucky, he thought, to get out of it how and when I did. She could have made a lot more trouble. As it was, she had seriously jeopardized his physical health just by protein depletion alone. That's right, he thought. It's time for my wheat germ oil, my vitamin E. Must go to my quarters. And while I'm there, I'll take a few glucose tablets to counterbalance my hypoglycemia, assuming I don't pass out on the way. And if I did, who would care? What, in fact, would they do? I'm essential to their survival, whether they recognize it or not. I'm vital to them, but are they vital to me? Yes, in the sense that Glenn Belsner is, vital because they can do, or allegedly can do, skilled tasks necessary for the maintenance of this stupid little incestuous small town that we're running here. This pseudo-family that doesn't work as a family in any respect, thanks to the meddlers from outside. I'm going to have to tell Tall Chief and, what's his name? Morley. Tell Tall Chief and Morley and Morley's wife, who is not bad-looking at all, about the meddlers from outside, about the building which I have seen close enough to read the writing above the entrance, which no one else has, insofar as I know. He started down the gravel path toward his quarters. As he came up onto the plastic porch of the living quarters, he saw four people in a gathering together, Susie Smart, Maggie Walsh, Tall Chief, and Mr. Morley. Morley was talking, his tub-shaped middle protruding like a huge inguinal hernia. I wonder what he lives on, Babel said to himself. Potatoes, broiled steak, with ketchup on everything, and beer. You can always tell a beer drinker. They have the perforated facial skin, perforated where the hair grows, and the bags under their eyes. They look, as he looks, as if they have an edema puffing them out, and renal damage as well, and of course, the ruddy skin. A self-indulgent man, he thought, like Morley, doesn't in any way understand, can't understand, that he's pouring poisons into his body. Minute embolisms, damage to critical areas of the brain. And yet they keep on, these oral types. Regression to a pre-reality testing stage. Maybe it's a misplaced biological survival mechanism for the good of the species they weed themselves out, leaving the women to more competent and more advanced male types. He walked up to the four of them, stood with his hands in his pockets, listening. Morley was relating the minutiae of a theological experience which he evidently had had, or pretended to have had. My dear friend, he called me. Obviously I mattered to him. He helped me with the reloading. It took a long time, and we talked. His voice was low, but I could understand him perfectly. He never used any excess words, and he could express himself perfectly. There was no mystery about it, like you sometimes hear. Anyhow, we loaded and talked, and he wanted to bless me. Why? Because, he said, I was exactly the kind of person who mattered to him. He was completely matter-of-fact about it. He simply stated it. You are the kind of person whom I think matters, he said, or words to that effect. I'm proud of you, he said. Your great love of animals, your compassion toward lower life forms, pervades your entire mentality. Compassion is the basis of the person who has risen from the confines of the curse. A personality type like yours is exactly what we are looking for. Morley paused, then, Go on, Maggie Walsh said in a fascinated voice. And then he said a strange thing, Morley said. He said, As I have saved you, saved your life, by my own compassion, I know that your own great capacity for compassion will enable you to save lives, both physically and spiritually, of others. Presumably he meant here at Delmach O. But he didn't say, Susie Smart said. He didn't have to, Morley said. I knew what he meant. I understood everything he said. In fact, I could communicate a lot more clearly with him than with most of the people I've known.
I don't mean any of you. Hell, I don't really know you yet. But you see what I mean.
There weren't any transcendental symbolic passages, no metaphysical nonsense like they used to talk about before Spektowski wrote the book. Spektowski was right. I can verify it on the basis of my own experiences with him, with the Walker.
Then you've seen it before, Maggie Walsh said. Several times.
Dr. Milton Babel opened his mouth and said,
I've seen it 7 times, and I encountered the Mentifactorer once. So if you add it together, I've had 8 experiences with the one true deity.
The 4 of them gazed at him with various expressions. Susie Smart looked skeptical. Maggie Walsh showed absolute disbelief. Both Tall Chief and Morley seemed relatively interested.
And twice, Babel said, with the intercessor. So it's 10 experiences in all, throughout my whole life, of course.
From what you heard from Mr. Morley about his experience, Tall Chief said, did it sound similar to your own?
Babel kicked at a pebble on the porch. It bounced away, struck the nearby wall, fell silent then.
Fairly much so, by and large. Yes, I think we can in some part accept what Morley says, and yet,
he hesitated meaningfully,
I'm afraid I'm skeptical. Was it truly the Walker, Mr. Morley? Could it not have been a passing itinerant laborer who wanted you to think he was the Walker? Had you thought of that? Oh, I'm not denying that the Walker appears again and again among us. My own experiences testify to that.
I know he was, Morley said, looking angry, because of what he said about my cat.
Ah, your cat.
Babel smiled both within and without. He felt deep and hearty amusement transverse his circulatory system.
So this is where the business about your great compassion for lower life forms comes from.
Looking nettled and even more angrily outraged, Morley said,
How would a passing tramp know about my cat? Anyhow, there aren't any passing tramps at Tekel Upharsin. Everybody works. That's what a kibbutz is.
He looked now hurt and unhappy. The voice of Glenn Belsner dinned in the darkened distance behind them.
Come on in. I've made contact with the goddamn satellite. I'm about to have it run its audio tapes.
Babel, as he started walking, said,
I didn't think he could do it.
How good he felt, although he did not know exactly why. Something to do with Morley and his awe-inspiring account of meeting the Walker, which now did not seem awe-inspiring after all. Once it had been scrupulously investigated and by a person with adult critical judgment. The 5 of them entered the briefing hall and seated themselves among the others. From the speakers of Belsner's radio equipment, sharp static punctuated with random voice noises sounded. The din hurt Babel's ears, but he said nothing. He displayed the formal attention which the technician had demanded.
What we're picking up right now is a scatter track, Belsner informed them over the racket. The tape hasn't started to run yet. It won't do that until I give the satellite the right signal.
Start the tape, Wade Fraser said.
Yeah, Glenn, start the tape.
Voices from here and there in the chamber.
Okay,
Belsner said. He reached out, touched control knobs on the panel before him. Lights winked on and off as servo assist mechanisms switched into activity aboard the satellite. From the speakers, a voice said,
Greetings to the Delmach O colony from General Treaton of Interplan West.
That's it, Belsner said. That's the tape. Shut up, Belsner, we're listening. It can be run back any number of times, Belsner said.
You have now completed your recruiting,
General Treaton of Interplan West said.
This completion was anticipated by us at Interplan RAV to occur not later than the 14th of September, Terran Statute time. First, I would like to explain why the Delmach O colony was created. By whom and for what purpose? It is basically...
All at once, the voice stopped. The speakers blared. Belsner stared at the receiving gear with mute dismay. The speakers said. Static burst in, receded as Belsner twisted dials, and then silence. After a pause, Ignatz Thug guffawed.
What is it, Glenn?
Tony Dunkelwelt said. Belsner said thickly,
There are only two tape heads used in transmitters such as are aboard the satellite. An erase head, mounted first on the transport, then a replay record head. What has happened is that the replay record head has switched from replay to record, so it is erasing the tape an inch ahead, automatically. There is no way I can switch it off. It's on record, and that's where it'll probably stay, until the whole tape is erased.
But if it erases, Wade Fraser said, then it'll be gone forever, no matter what you do.
That's right, Glenn Belsner said. It's erasing and then recording nothing. I can't get it out of the record mode. Look!
He snapped several switches open and shut.
Nothing. The head is jammed. So much for that.
He slammed a major relay into place, cursed, sat back, removed his glasses and wiped his forehead.
Christ, he said.
Well, so it goes. The speakers twittered briefly with crosstalk, then fell silent again. No one in the room spoke. There was nothing to say.